Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Associate Executive Director, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Well, welcome everyone to the April edition of Practical Significance. April, as I'm sure you all are aware, is Mathematics and Statistics Awareness Month. So what better way for us to celebrate Mathematics and Statistics Awareness Month than to talk about a topic that we all should be aware of, which is artificial intelligence. And so we are really delighted to have three guests with us. And we are going to start, as we do by tradition, by asking our guests to introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about their day jobs. And so, Tien, I'll start with you, then we'll move to Mark, and then we'll go to Hung Tu. So, Tien.
Hi, thanks for inviting me to be here. My name is Tien Zheng. I'm currently a professor of statistics at Columbia. And for the past 5 years, I've been the chair of the department. So at Columbia, in addition to running a department, I also participate in a lot of collaboration with applying scientists in multiple disciplines. And it will be an understatement that every discipline is being flooded with excitement in AI. So I think I'm super excited about what we talk about today.
Hi, I'm Mark Lichtman. I'm a senior lecturer on statistics at Harvard University. I've been at Harvard in this role since 2016. I'm also a senior statistician at the Center for Healthcare Organization and Implementation Research, which is a VA center of innovation. I guess the reason that I was invited to join this prestigious group is that I am also the chair of the ASA Committee on Data Science and Artificial Intelligence, which is a committee that just started in 2022, so basically just 2 years ago. So it's a new, young, vibrant committee, and I am delighted to be chairing this committee. And I'm also excited to be talking about some issues at the intersection of statistics and AI in this conversation as well.
Before we go to Hung Tu, Mark, I just have to ask, do you play chess with a computer?
Rarely. Okay. I mean, if I'm in the mood, if like my ego gets a little out of control and I want to be humbled, then I'll go ahead and play one of these top chess playing programs, which pretty much can be guaranteed to thrash me.
Very good. Thanks. And Hung Tu, please tell us about what you do for your day job.
Yeah, I'm a professor of biostatistics. And actually, I have a joint appointment of multiple departments, including statistics, computer science, radiology, and genetics. And before that, actually, I worked in the tech company for 3 years as a chief scientist. That's the how do I get into AI and also statistics, data science in general. I have been at UNC since 2006. I work on with multiple different projects. I work closely with a computer scientist and a radiologist, and also people from other departments in the medical school.
Well, we're sure delighted to have the three of you on the podcast today. And we have a million questions. We're going to ask you just a small subset of the questions that we have. So I'm going to start by asking you, how has or how should the field of statistics evolve to meet the challenges of AI development and application? And I'll just call on you one by one. Mark, let's start with you this time.
Sure. The area of AI recently, in my view, been, you know, an area that statisticians have been paying pretty close attention to. You know, I think what basically has been happening over the past, you know, say 10 years or so is that there have been these pretty incredible successes in AI. And the methods that underlie a lot of these procedures, particularly in neural nets and deep learning, you know, are a little mysterious. On the one hand, there is a pretty solid foundation for a lot of these methods. But on the other hand, you know, it doesn't seem to, you know, correspond to things that statisticians have really been thinking very much about. So I think one of the burgeoning areas in statistics and how it's connected to AI is really just understanding the underpinnings of a lot of these methods, which in AI, which just seem to work. So there are certainly a number of statisticians that are doing some amazing work at the forefront of understanding a lot of the underpinnings of these, you know, mostly deep learning methods that are just, you know, driving technology in very impressive ways. I'll also say that the other area that statisticians are basically involved with this whole area of AI, not so much in a direct developmental way, is really helping to be able to like evaluate AI methods and basically work with essentially the output of AI methods to develop approaches that have maybe a little bit more familiarity among statisticians. And just as one quick example, the whole area of conformal inference is a really big area that's attracting a lot of attention among statisticians, mainly because conformal inference basically starts with essentially what could be a black box and then starts making predictive inference without really even knowing very much about what generates observations. And it's a very powerful tool that statisticians are really jumping onto. And like, that's a good example of an area that statisticians, I think, continue making some very important progress in parallel with development of AI.
Thanks, Mark. So Hantu, what say you?
In order to make move the statistics as a field to move forward in the AI era, I think there are four things we need to consider. I think the first one, I think the current curriculum needed to be modernized to fulfill the evolving demands of the modern data science. Because the curriculum was mainly developed almost 30 or 40 years ago with a little bit modification. And particularly in areas such as engineering capabilities, practical data analysis experiences, and the proficiency in data mining techniques. That's the first thing that I'm thinking about it. And the second thing is, I think the existing evaluation systems need some changes. I think I personally have been publishing many papers in machine learning conferences and journals. And based on my own observations, we needed to speed up the review process in our field and make our paper more acceptable to the data scientists and the practitioners. Because not make it too mathematical. There are many, when people use the method, they don't want to see a lot of math notation inside. The term of the story and how to use it in practice. That's one thing. Another thing that I'm thinking about, basically, I have been attending the NeurIPS for years. And I think our conferences are too conservative in the sense of to give the opportunities to the young rising stars and active researchers. Because in the NeurIPS, in the first day of the tutorial, all these lecturers as graduate students and also assistant professors. We need to think about that. I think that's important because the whole field is, grow very fast. A third thing is I think the tenure systems need to include all these data science related journals and conferences. Not just the focus on all the statistical journals, because there's so many new journals and conference proceedings. We need to open to our field. Another thing that I think is very important to encourage, promote a greater partition of the statisticians across various study sections. And actually, we need to train them for effective communication and equitable contribution. I think this is super important in our field. And in particular, all these study sections in AIH and SF. We really needed more professional statisticians to participate in all these panels. It's super important. If we don't go, the cake will belong to other people. It's very important. I'm thinking about the field. And also, it's highly beneficial. We need to get involved all these private sectors to invest in our research and also for product development. Because we can do the same thing. We use to develop all these pipelines, protocols for the FDA, all the things, right? And why can't we do for other business? That's also important. Okay, and that's the four major things that I think is super important of our field.
So thanks, and thanks for just suggesting, small incremental changes. So those are all big deals that will take some cultural change. So thanks for raising those issues. Tian?
Yeah, I just want to build on what Mark and Hongtu said. I think Mark basically covers a lot of exciting research trajectory we are observing, and Hongtu is commenting on some infrastructure changes needed. So I'm going to answer Ron's question about culture shift. I think as a discipline, as a community, we have come a long way since like 15 years ago when big data first started drawing global attention. We have to give us a credit that the statistical community have actually made changes over the last 15 years, the way we teach, the way we run our department, the way we recognize and then send our award. And we have been recognizing and promoting computing intensive application data, intensive applications, machine learning research more than we used to. And then I think we have to, you know, take this moment, recognize we have done that, right? So these computing, machine learning, and data intensive applications are three very important pillars for AI. These are not changing. We were moving in the right direction, and we definitely should continue to move in that direction. We have thought leaders putting out like Bing Yu's vertical data science textbook just came out, and David Donahoe published a data singularity paper calling for a cultural shift for statistics. All these are in the right direction. However, I think then how did this change happen? This change happened because we felt that the data science is moving faster than statistics and we need to catch up. We had a slow start when big data first happened, and we and a lot of departments come together and take on initiatives and make change happen. But over the past 2 to 3 years, there is a feeling that we are falling behind again. We're being left out in some of the AI conversation. This is because AI is moving on a much faster speed. A few technological breakthroughs in recent years enabled so many more fields to embrace AI computing data than the previous big data era. And now the whole research horizon is broader and more exciting. So therefore, what needs to happen for the statistical community is to recognize we were doing the right thing by shifting in these three directions. However, the wind is blowing stronger, and we need to continue on what we're doing well, but with more proactive effort to accelerate and encourage more energetic participation. And in addition, there's one thing AI is different from big data. Big data calls for collaboration. Statisticians can contribute effectively by being a very effective collaborator. AI involves workflow and system. In order for us to contribute meaningfully in AI, at least some of our statisticians need to engage into the end-to-end AI workflow in order to bring back important problems for the whole community. If no one in statistics is willing to be the pioneers to go into AI and lead AI applications, then our community will not be able to keep up speed with the AI research. So that's what I think is a culture shift we need to make. Continue what we do, and but faster.
Thank you for that, Tian, and thank you all three for these great answers. Has my head spinning a little bit. Speaking of head spinning, I now want to ask you what you think are the biggest challenges for statistics in the future of AI. You've touched on this a little bit, but Hamtu, let's start with you. What do you see as the biggest challenges?
I think in terms of, in my opinion, the biggest challenge to our community is, I think there are several things. One is the diminishing pool of the talented students. I think because nowadays the CS and the undergrad are many in this kind of talented students. Okay, that's the number one. The second thing is basically funding opportunities. There's a lot of the funding opportunities for the AI-related research. I think there's much more because both government and federal government and also private sectors invest billions of dollars on that. Okay? That's basically the second thing that we're facing. To me, that's the big issue. The number three is basically the emerging of the new areas in the private sectors, basically the new domains with no statistician involved. Okay, I think that's the three things I worry a lot every day. Okay, that would be a big problem for us. I just want to talk here. I think that's these big challenges are big enough.
Thank you for that. Tian, how about you?
So I think we definitely have a lot of potential. I often say that no one's going to deny that AI needs statistics. Statistics should be central to AI in order to address a lot of important problem AI. I also think that AI is, recently I have heard several seminars where I see AI is in new ways for us to think about what is model, like expanding the definition of model is creating new ways of quantifying uncertainty. And recently, I even think that they're creating new ways for us to think about probability distributions through all the diffusion models. So these are opportunities. For example, lately, I think this week, NSF just released a new call for grants for AI-assisted mathematical research, right? So obviously that AI is expanding the toolbox of mathematicians. So shouldn't AI be part of our inquiry too? Like, shouldn't statistics think about in addition to we study AI as an object, but AI can also be part of our toolbox. So in my view, therefore, one of the biggest threats to our discipline now is a talent pipeline, faculty development, and research resources, like Hong Tu said. If we're not proactively revising our curriculum to enable our students and young researchers to take better advantage of AI as their toolbox, and to be able to develop deeper appreciation, understanding of the AI system so that they can make their research relevant, then all this call for proposals for the national resources for AI research will not have too much of involvement of statistician. And then maybe in a few decades, in a few years, they will recognize statistics is still central to AI research, but our pipeline already dried up. So that is what I see the biggest challenge for statistics. Of course, there are intellectual challenges like problems, you know, what is the probability distribution for complex objects that AI can help us create? That's the kind of open challenges one can think of. But we do need to worry for the next generation whether we can continue to have generation after generation of bright and excited young researchers to identify as statisticians, learn about the central foundational principle of statistics, at the same time be able to embrace research in AI.
Thank you, Tian. So Mark, let's wind up this question with you.
So without duplicating what Hong Tu and Tian said, I will reemphasize that one of my concerns has to do with a lot of the tensions that have been going on over the years between statisticians and typically computer scientists in the area of machine learning and deep learning in particular, where all this development has been done in a way where the statisticians have been struggling to be at the table. And I think going forward, one of the biggest concerns is that statisticians may, if they're not proactive enough, be left behind. And basically, the world of AI is going to basically try to operate and continue its development without statisticians at the table. I think it's important to recognize that statisticians do have value and, you know, try to make this clear to the computer science community in particular, the ones that are mainly behind the AI movement, because if we don't, then we're going to, you know, run into some real issues. It's also important, I think, in making this case that, you know, AI, while incredibly impressive, doesn't necessarily solve all problems. In fact, you know, even fairly basic statistical approaches are not only perfectly adequate, but often are superior to AI approaches to solving problems. I was even just talking to a colleague recently who's in the area of sports analytics, and you know, he has a lot of pressure having all these predictive models being constructed through deep neural nets. And at the end of the day, he ends up implementing a logistic regression, and it actually outperforms, you know, some of these deep learning models. So there's plenty of room to perform fairly straightforward applications of basically classical methods, and those are going to be perfectly fine. I'll mention one other thing, which is that I think one of the areas that statisticians can be much more vocal about is that, you know, we basically have the expertise on uncertainty propagation, which I think most leaders in the field of AI are maybe not paying quite as much attention to, in part because they're working with so much data that maybe they don't have to worry as much about uncertainty of any inferences that they make. But that's so ingrained in the statistician mindset. And I think as things proceed, where we're working with enormous data sets that are being used for very personalized kinds of applications, like personalized medicine or personalized education, then you really do need to start worrying about the level of uncertainty in your conclusions. And that's something that statisticians can very much help with.
So, Mark, what are you most excited about?
Probably like many other people, you know, I woke up one morning in late 2022 with the news that ChatGPT was made available to the public. And I guess the reason I paid attention was I was reading an article that apparently it was entirely written by ChatGPT. And then I was told that, yeah, this is something you could play around with. And so even though I was certainly paying, you know, reasonable attention to what was going on in the world of AI, I was stunned at what some of these generative AI algorithms could do, you know, using large language models. I'll start off by just simply saying that I'm very excited about the promise of generative AI and a lot of what it can do, specifically in the area of these days. I mean, I regularly use generative AI for helping me with my writing, at least at minimum as a way of proofreading my writing, because the language models are so good that you can pretty much guarantee that your writing is going to improve. Also, even for coding tasks. So if I need to implement something quickly, or you know, I just don't want to spend a half hour just writing something up, I'll just in a sentence or two explain what I need to have coded up, and then I'll just get my answer immediately. So it's a huge, huge time saver. And I'll mention the one other area that I'm actually really impressed by, and I think has an enormous potential impact, is really in the area of enhancing the creative process. So for example, like I'm a musician, and just being able to use generative AI to help inform writing music or even just writing stories or text is such an enormous help and a time saver, and not a replacement for generating stuff that comes out of my head, but something that can be very helpful as an assistive tool. And so some of these, you know, some of these ideas are just incredibly helpful.
Tian, I'll go to you. What are you most excited about?
I'm a data person, so I'm generally excited about cool and fun data set people put out there. It used to be very hard to find collaborator who's willing to share data. Because AI is so exciting, and I have never been approached by so many collaborators just saying, oh, I have data, I have interviews, I heard AI and ChatGPT can help us analyze the data, so we want to talk about this. So I got very excited about this willingness to collaborate. And in addition, I also recognize that every time you collaborate with a new discipline, you need to learn how they organize their data, what the special format the data in. But nowadays, AI has done such a good job of educating people, saying in order for you to use the AI tool, that there are the following data formats you have to comply with. So our collaborators are also have been educating themselves in machine learning AI. So the data are becoming better and better in format now that they have less bias, but at least they come in a little bit better format than they used to. And also, in addition, that the tools Mark mentioned, such as ChatGPT, also make a collaboration easier in a way that in the past I used to need to ask a lot of questions to my collaborator about some simple definitions. I sometimes feel bad about bothering them too much with some very fundamental questions, say in climate science or in epidemiology. Now I have ChatGPT as this tutor, very patient tutor, and I can just ask anything and then really develop a appreciation of a background knowledge very quickly. I'm most excited about the richness of the opportunity available to us, available to nearly anyone in statistics who want to embrace a collaboration.
Great. And Hung-Tu, we'll end with you in terms of what are you most excited about?
Yeah, I think to me is because I work in a tech company for 3 years, and then at the beginning I don't know what can I do, you know, because I was recruited as a statistician working in AI labs, and I just heard of the names, and basically I after I joined the tech company, I realized that the statistician can do a lot of things in AI areas. In the beginning, I just say, oh, that's a deep learning. I just, you know, borrow some of these things, right? It seems like we can basically, first of the things I'm thinking about is, and for all these AI tools, and actually we can modify and adapt many AI tools to our own projects and expand our spectrum in various applications. Okay, actually, they give a lot of opportunities. And I do a lot of image analysis. I find that AI tools is pretty useful for many tasks. Okay, it's basically revolutionized the field. And also nowadays I do a lot of NLP type of things. And because when you have OpenAI, you don't need a collaborate with the LP researchers. I can do all the things because that's to give us opportunities. Okay. And I think the second thing I'm thinking about basically, I can integrate AI tools with many existing statistical methods for further method development. I use a lot of, I combine the neural network with quantile regressions and for many kinds of the projects and in the tech company, in particular related to the treatment effects and also distribution of reinforced learning type of things. Because you can looking at the problems much clearer from that aspect, okay? And number three is we can improve our, basically we have many more complex theoretic problems because AI basically, the tools is mainly developed for all these kinds of pattern recognition problems, okay? And there's a lot of statistical challenges behind it. I think that's the opportunity. I saw these challenges. At the same time, so I think that's an opportunity for us, right? There's a complete new models and new kinds of scenarios. So we need to work on it. And it's making me excited, okay? And I think another thing is basically we can improve our education programs by using AI tools. Actually, in our universities, and we have these kinds of the, you know, all kinds of committees from the provost office to the dean's office and, you know, from the department. And actually, we think about basically how really integrate all these AI tools with the current research and also our educating programs. You think about all the kids, you know, elementary school, they're already talking about AI tools. They use it for education purposes. I think that's the, I'm excited about that. I don't feel that threatened. Other than that, I think I really want to embrace AI tools.
There are a lot of exciting things to think about. In that respect, we're going to slide into the career advice portion of the podcast, or what it might be this time, the Biff Tannen portion of the podcast. And you have to be of a certain age and like certain movies to recognize that reference. But for the rest of you, what we're going to be asking here, now that you know what you know from your experiences and the things that we've talked about today, and as you've been thinking about the future, what advice would you go back and give to yourself as a student to prepare for what people are coming in for today? Because I'm sure your students are asking this question as well. So what would your current self tell your past self? Tian, we'll start with you on that.
This is a very interesting question. I was pretty adventurous when I was a student. I did a lot of things that other students wouldn't have done. For example, when I was working on my dissertation, I went and took a class from the genetic department on computational biology and sequencing, which involved like exam projects and with my friends from the biology department. And also I went to seminar talk in other departments. And so I had a lot of fun. If I go back, travel back in time, I don't know what I will tell my student self. Maybe I'll tell her, have fun, they're more fun in the future, you'll enjoy it, and encourage her to keep doing what she was doing. Because I don't believe there was something that I could have tried that I decided not to. I think being adventurous would be my advice to my past self.
That's great advice. And I think it really stands up for a lot of things. But I have to say, when I think about my student self and working on my dissertation, taking a class for fun to learn some extra things probably wasn't something I was dialed into at that point, but it's good advice and it's obviously served you very well. Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll sort of take the opposite tack from Qian and say, going back my student self, I probably would have advised that guy just to have a little less fun. I definitely prioritized making sure that I had a fun time during my graduate school years. Maybe on reflection, I should have hunkered down a little bit more. But anyway, it all had a happy ending. I think in terms of the material that I might have chosen to focus on, I suppose, had I known then what I know now, I probably would have veered a little bit more in the direction of paying attention to computing. I mean, I graduated with my PhD in 1993, and that was essentially the years that, Monte Carlo Markov chain became pretty popular, and I was living in a a Bayesian world at the time. So it was really, you know, right at everybody's doorstep. And I certainly was a heavy user at the time, but I kind of wish I got a little bit more into the computational details and then just generally followed computation. That said, for students now, I guess I would probably end up giving, you know, somewhat conflicting advice, I suppose, because on the one hand, I do feel strongly that students should have a pretty strong background in basic statistical principles. And so I wouldn't ignore that at all. But on the other hand, at the same time, if students are able to, you know, certainly be aware of this whole world of machine learning, AI, and even more so data science, where it's actually important to be, you know, somewhat conversant in the science that you're trying to apply a lot of these quantitative methods to, you know, that's an important piece of the puzzle. So, you know, seeing the entire data science pipeline is, I think, an essential piece to being a well-trained quantitative member of society in a very detailed sense. I certainly do advise plenty of students on what would benefit their career goals. And, you know, usually I do tell them that, you know, you really do need to pay pretty close attention to statistical principles. But at the same time, it's definitely worthwhile to be pretty well aware of what's going on in the AI world, because that's basically where a lot of the activity is going on.
Thanks, Mark. It does seem like things turned out okay for you in spite of how it may have been back in the day. So, Hamtu, what sort of advice would you like to pass along?
You know, I have very complicated, you know, career path. But in general, I feel like most of the valuable things, you need to do applications, very complicated applications, and really inspire you to develop the methods and also do theoretical development. Some people think I'm against the theory. I'm not. But in any cases, I always tell my students, you need to understand the data, understand the problems, then you're doing method development. And that's how do I train my students these days, compared with the students made 10 years ago. Okay? I always threw them into a concrete project and you do all the data analysis. Then you basically understand the data, understand all the method, the problem of the method. And they start to think about how to develop a new method, how to develop a new theory behind it. That's something I always, these days, I change the way I'm mentoring my students.
Thanks for that. That's really great advice to students and also advice to faculty as they are starting out as well.
Oh, I also want to emphasize that yesterday I watched a video and they talking about the people working in the OpenAI. And they say that everyone in the OpenAI, and basically they need to know how to process the data. And then second thing, you need to code all the methods. You need to do method research. And also you need to make the data-centric product. Nowadays, you almost need to know everything. It's not just say, I just know how to prove the theory. That's not enough for the modern data scientists.
Well, we will end by tradition with a question that says, in your limited free time, but in your free time, what are you reading, listening to, watching? I'm always interested in new books and new podcasts or new movies. So Hongtu, I'll start with you.
Yeah, that's the tough question these days. I don't watch a lot of these days. In terms of book, I only read a book with my son. He's a sixth grader. And because he has some difficulties with reading, I have to sit next to him, read page by page. Okay, that's something I read some books. I do watch the news and the TVs every day, and I just watch the news, nothing else.
Mark, what are you reading, listening to, watching, all of the above?
I wish you asked this in a different year when I actually had a little more free time. I haven't been keeping up as much with fun things to do on the side. I'll mention that I'm a huge Michael Connelly fan. He's basically started off as a mystery. Okay, Ron is giving the signal. He's on the same page, literally, with me. He started off as a mystery writer. He's become more of a police procedural writer, but very good writer and very exciting. And so I basically have his last book waiting to be read. I tend to listen a lot to music just on my devices. So I often will just like listen to plenty of Beatles and also Fountains of Wayne in terms of, you know, catching up on video type entertainment. I've been kind of going back to old movies and shows that I haven't seen that I probably should have seen. So I've actually started going back to the classics, including seeing the movie The Third Man. I haven't seen North by Northwest. So I've been starting to catch up on some of these, like, you know, really old classic movies. And then I've just started deciding that I'm going to go through the show Modern Family, which I never saw, which I'm really enjoying quite a lot. That's a very, very funny show.
That's great. Tian, reading, listening to, watching?
Yeah. So it's amazing that we all wish to have more time doing all these things. I do enjoy reading. So one book I would recommend to the audience of this podcast is a book called Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro. He's a Nobel Literacy Award winning author, and his more famous work is Never Let Me Go. So both books are sci-fi books talking about the future world where technology are interfering with normal life. And the Clara the Sun is about when we live in a society where humans are living with robots. And the book is written from the perspective of a robot and is written in very beautiful but simple language. So Hong Tu, if you are looking for the next book for your son, highly recommend it. It's not a heavy read, but it's very beautifully written. On the listening part, I'm put on an audiobook whenever I cook. So it's one of Kill Two Birds with One Stone. So the current book I'm listening to is My Name is Barbara by Barbara Streisand. She read the book herself, highly recommend. She even sang on the book. So she playing her movie, she playing her song. She also is a very adventurous personality. She talked about her decisions of trying new things, which a lot of time I can relate very much when listening. A book I plan to read next is How Data Happened, written by two colleagues of mine at Columbia, Matt Jones and Chris Wiggins. It talks about the history of data, and I have heard their presentation many times. I know a lot of those spoilers from the book, but I'm still looking forward to read the book. I recently watched the show The Good Place, a show inspired by philosophy. So I found that to be really interesting and stimulating and at the same time very funny.
Well, that's great. I really appreciate all of these recommendations. Ron, I would ask you, except I know you're reading Izzy's newest book. Ron's daughter has a new book out that's getting rave reviews. So I'll just toss in the look for Izzy Wasserstein. But with that, we want to thank our guests, and we will conclude with Ron's top 10.
Thank you, Donna. Now for something completely different for this month's top 10 list. As you know, an anagram is a word, phrase, or name formed by rearranging the letters of another, such as name, formed from the word mean. Always interested in stimulating the brains of our listeners, the Practical Significance Podcast brings you the top 10 anagrams of statistical terms. I will present the top 10, then give you the answers. So pause the podcast at the end of the list if you want to solve them for yourself first. We'll start easy, then get a little tougher. Number 10, anger. Number 9, maples. Number 8, cave rain. Number 7, Asiatic stint. Number 6, map terror. That's in as in ripping the maps, not scaring someone with them. Number 5, ascetic dean. We've all probably had one of those. Number 4, Arctic religion. Number 3, ego rinsers. I take a couple of those every day. Number 2, mainly polo. And the number 1 anagram of a statistical term, dork lawman. Okay, listeners, pause here if you want to work them out for yourself. And meanwhile, I'll thank Inga's Anagrams Online for its help with these. Okay. Here come the solutions. Number 10, anger is range. Number 9, maples is sample. Number 8, cave rain, variance. Number 7, Asiatic stint is statistician. Number 6, map terror is parameter. Number five, Ascetic Dean, Data Science. Number four, Arctic Religion is Critical Region. Number three, Ego Rinsers, Regression. Number two, Mainly Polo is Polynomial. And number one, Dork Lawman is Random Walk. That's it for this month's episode of Lactic Wrap Face and Sizing Doc Taps. We'll continue the conversation next month. I like the end. Best of all.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AMSTAT News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.